essentially, if you can just have people be freer in making their own decisions on where they work and how they work, we think that makes for a better world. I think if we've even added 1% to that movement, we're very, very happy about it.
Welcome to the Authentically Successful Show, an entrepreneurship podcast that delivers you real stories and advice from successful founders and CEOs in various industries. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, a longtime professional recruiter, executive coach, thought leader, and creator of talent-centric organizations. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Authentically Successful. I'm Carol Schultz. With me today is Liam Martin, co-founder and chief innovation officer of Time Doctor, an employee productivity SaaS platform. He's an authority in asynchronous management methodologies and remote work, and is a passionate advocate for remote-first cultures. Liam's expertise in asynchronous management has enabled countless businesses to optimize their remote workforce potential. His insights have been featured in prestigious publications like Forbes and TechCrunch. As a co-organizer of the Running Remote Conference and author of the bestseller Running Remote, he continues to enlighten the business world on the advantages of flexible and location-independent teams. Liam, glad to have you on the show.
Carol, thanks a lot for having me. Excited to jump into some really interesting subjects connected to remote work today.
Awesome. Well, I am too. So let's start with what the biggest problem is Time Doctor solves.
Time Doctor is a predictive workforce analytics tool. So it predicts different actions that employees may or may not take inside of the business and hopefully gives you the information to either solve those problems or to basically let them happen. The biggest one that we do is quit prediction. So we can predict with a 74.2% accuracy rate whether or not someone will quit their job 6 months before they do, so that you can either decide to try to save that person, or if you don't want to be able to continue on with that person, work them out of the organization as quickly as possible.
That's really slick. I love that. So when, you know, at that 70 plus percent accuracy, who typically steps in?
So generally it's HR, but then it's also the direct manager. So in most of our setups, we have our executive team that uses the technology and then the HR team. We don't give it to direct managers because they're a little too close to that problem. We feel that HR is a much better partner to be able to work on the issues that relate to quitting, because the vast majority of the time, unfortunately, the manager is a reason why that person actually quits.
Well, right. I mean, I've said for many, many years, people leave managers, they don't leave companies.
Exactly. So we find this exactly the same thing in our data.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Tell me a little bit about, so you and your partner, Rob Rawson, founded the company in 2012, so 11 years ago now, and you bootstrapped the whole thing. I'm curious, first of all, why you chose to bootstrap, or did you go for funding and couldn't get it, first of all?
So it was by choice. We went to a bunch of companies about 3 or 4 years into the business, and we got a few term sheets back. And every single term sheet had one caveat, which was, you must move your team to Palo Alto, New York, Toronto. And our mission is, we are trying to empower the world's transition towards remote work. And so we said, well, this kind of goes against our core mission, who we are as a company. And they said, we love your mission. We love what you're doing. We're venture capitalists. Trust us. This is the only way to be able to build a business. So this was like 2014, 2015. And obviously we found now, 2020, that was not the only way to be able to run a business. And you can run a multi-billion dollar business and do it remotely.
Yeah, right. And let me point out that you're in Montreal. So, you know, why Montreal isn't as good as Toronto or, you know, and anywhere else, you know, Palo Alto or wherever is kind of interesting. And they're probably sorry they didn't do it the way you wanted to do it in hindsight, right?
Well, I mean, for me, I own the entire term sheet. So me and my business partner are very happy about that.
Right. My point is they probably, you know, later on thought, yeah, we probably should have done it the way they wanted to, right? That's their mistake. I mean, you know, you own the whole business now.
I had a funny story where one of the people that sent us a term sheet and we said no because of the requirement to move to that particular city. I remember in 2021, they messaged me asking to give a training to all of their companies on how to operate their businesses in a remote way. And I just thought, wow, completely full circle. And I did it very happily because our mission is to empower remote work all over the world. But a little part of me wanted me to tell them to go F themselves, which I did not.
You know what? I'm sure they paid you for it. So, you know, you got, it was a win-win for you, frankly, right?
Exactly.
And you've built the business up to a 20 million ARR, which is really fantastic. Tell me a little bit about your journey to Time Doctor. You know, from you know, getting out of school and, you know, I mean, you did not have the typical path that many tech founders do.
No, I was in grad school at McGill University, which is about 5 or 6 blocks from where I'm at right now, actually. And I was pursuing I was pursuing graduate school in sociology, specifically sociology of work. And I realized after teaching my very first class, because most graduate students teach first and second year courses, that it was not for me because I remember we started with 300 students. I ended up with less than 200 by the end of the semester and the worst academic reviews in the history of the department. And the department had been in operation for 188 years. So a very, very long time. And I went into my supervisor's office and I said, I don't think I'm very good at this. And he said, no, you are not. And I said, so what do you think I should do? He said, well, you got to get pretty good at this teaching thing if you want to go the academic route. So either figure out how to do that or figure out something else to do. 4 weeks later, I threw a master's thesis under his door and I was out into the real world where I ended up actually starting my very first business, which was online tutoring. And this was back in 2008, 2009, when we didn't have Zoom, we didn't have Riverside. We had a real difficult version of Skype, to be completely honest with you. It was difficult, but there was a business model there and it was a business model that grew. And then I ended up going to a conference called South by Southwest, which is kind of like spring break for nerds. And I met my now business partner, Rob, at that conference. And we decided to partner up on Time Doctor, which was solving a real deep problem inside of my tutoring business, which was I could not actually measure how long someone was working with a student while they were working remotely. So a student would come back to me saying, I didn't work with my tutor for 10 hours. I work with them for 5. I go to the tutor and say, did you work with him for 10 or 5 hours? And he'd say, I billed you for 10. So I'd end up having to refund the student the 5 hours and pay out the full 10 hours for the tutor. And that was really destroying the business.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Liam, what do you think it was that made you be such a horrible teacher? I have to imagine you looked at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I was a really bad lecturer, and I think I'm a pretty good teacher. So I think that there's a difference between passive and active learning. I don't want to necessarily pull this podcast into a completely separate direction. Having difficulty in learning something, the process of having tension and frustration connected to trying to learn a skill is actually the best way to learn a skill. But studies show that when people look at that way of learning and experience it, it's the most uncomfortable for them because they're thinking to themselves, well, I don't know this subject and I'm never going to be any good at this particular subject. The moment that you feel that is exactly when you're starting to learn.
Liam, when you look at your business, what would you say is a competitive nature? I mean, are there other companies doing this, doing some of it, trying to do it? What's that look like?
Well, you know, it's so new. ChatGPT really opened up the floodgates for everyone else. We were working on this before ChatGPT. To answer your question, no one is currently doing it. However, probably someone is doing it and we don't know about it yet. So it's great to have first mover advantage, but whether that lasts for 3 months or a year, we don't know.
Yeah, sure. Time will tell. So given that, how do you tend to find your prospects?
So for us, the most popular way of doing it, and I know this is really old school, is just straight up search engine optimization, ranking for keywords are connected to our core ICP, our customer, our persona that we're looking for. And outside of that, it's probably the second largest funnel is paid advertising. Third one would be things like podcasts that I currently do, press mentions, that type of a thing. But the biggest part of our funnel is search engine optimization. I would not suggest to a business owner starting today that they pursue search engine optimization for the same reason that we just talked about. AI is actually going to completely change the way that search operates very, very soon. If you take a look at Google Bard as an example, there will not be 10 search results anymore. Google will just tell you the answer. What's the best time tracking tool for remote teams? They will say, it will just say Time Doctor, or we hope it will. Because if we're the second one, it won't actually include us anywhere near as much as we want to. And that is changing the game. Mm-hmm. But that historically is where we've gotten to where we are today.
Liam, what are people putting into a search engine to find you? So what does that SEO look like?
So I would say time tracking for remote teams. Our core ICP is something called business process outsourcing companies. So if you Google business process outsourcing, we will be first or second result for that. Workforce analytics is a very popular search term that's literally just popped up in the last 2 to 3 years. We show up at the top of that. And we're talking about thousands and thousands of different keywords that we rank for. Top three results on Google that that customers end up Googling and come into our ecosystem. And for us, it's about education first. So we don't want someone to actually sign up for a trial. We want them to engage with our blog or some of our other assets 8 or 9 times usually before they actually end up signing up for a trial.
Interesting. You know, I have to tell you, when I hear time tracking, I get nervous. And I'm wondering if other employees get nervous when they hear that.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there is always a concern about being measured. And measurement is one of those things that are scary because it's quantifiable. It's not qualitative. And one of the core tenets of asynchronous management is quantifiable outcomes inside of everything that you do. So in studying remote companies that were remote before the pandemic, which is what I did for my book, Running Remote, one of the things that they all had in common was something called asynchronous management, which is the ability to be able to communicate and collaborate without synchronously interacting with each other. And one of the ways that they do that is by creating asynchronous quantifiable outcomes inside of the business. How many backlinks are you generating? How many podcasts are you producing? Do I need to actually jump on a Zoom call and report that to a manager? Or can I simply put that inside of a dashboard somewhere so that people can consume that information when it's most advantageous to them to consume it? That's the core of asynchronous management, which is very, very different from the old school pre-remote way of working. So it just requires a different management philosophy, and that can get stressful for a lot of people, but it also very clearly identifies your value prop inside of the business and shows you where you're creating very clear value.
You know, and I also think, and you make a really good point, and I also think that, you know, if I were buying this for my company, for example, I would, you know, I would have an all hands meeting and tell everybody what this is and why we're using it. And oh, by the way, we're not using this in order to bust your stones because you're not doing work. When I first started in my business of to learn how to be a professional recruiter 31 years ago, I'll say very quietly 31 years ago, I remember they would at the end of each week, they would look at how much time I was on, how much time you were on the phone, right? And I was always so worried about that. Oh my God. And you know, you're never how many hours, how many minutes do you think you're on the phone this week? No, you were on the phone a fourth of that. The point was not to, you know, rake me over the coals, but was to help teach me what, you know, what that really looked like, what I should be doing. Right. And I think that as a leader, if I were bringing this in, and maybe you guide your leaders to do that as well. Right? To talk to their team. Because like I said, when I hear time tracking, it makes me nervous for employees. Not that they're doing anything wrong, but it's all, you know, it's like a glass full versus a glass empty point of view. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you can use it for good or for evil. We highly encourage people to use it for good.
Good.
Case in point, when you look at burnout and we have hundreds of thousands of people that have quit, that we've been able to see 9, 10, 20 months of their work history that's led to burnout. One of the biggest factors is overwork, but it was quite interesting, the type of overwork. So if you look at someone working early in the morning, working after 6 p.m., working on the weekends, that equates for 47% of the burnout reasons, basically the percentage of someone burning out. There's only one other factor connected to overwork, one factor that is 53% of our model, and it is working late on Friday nights. If you work late on a Friday night, you will burn out. And if you don't, you can actually really save all of your team members from that burnout. So we tell our team, or we tell our clients, so if I had to do one thing, if they've got to overwork throughout their work week, here's the one thing that I would make sure is absolute, you know, God honest truth, must be done. The team needs to go back and be done at 4:30 on Friday. Take them a half hour off early. Say, go enjoy that life with your family. If you've got to come back on Saturday, hey, you've got to come back on Saturday. But that's that one singular thing that can literally cut out half of the burnout reasons based off our algorithm. There's a thousand different variables that kind of connect to that, that I can talk for hours about. But those are just small examples of things that if you see someone working after 5 p.m. on a Friday as an HR professional, you need to actually message them on Slack and say, stop working, go home and be with your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really a cultural decision, right? And I think that my hope is that more and more companies are starting to realize that. I mean, myself, you know, I work from home. I've worked from home for over 20 years. I work for myself, so I set my own hours, but I work a lot. You know, I sometimes answer emails on the weekends, but you know, it's my business. And often on Fridays, I'm like, at 4 o'clock, I'm like, I'm done. I just can't sit in front of my computer and work anymore. You know, if I really need to work, I can work tomorrow a little bit.
Yeah. A variable that results in a 16% reduction in an employee quitting is whether they access and work on email before 9 a.m. Now, why would you think that that exists? It's because they're really excited and committed to their job. What's the worst job when you work from a computer? It's answering emails, to be completely honest with you. So the workers that answer emails before 9 a.m. are the ones that are truly committed to the mission of whatever you're doing inside of your organization. Again, I've got thousands of these little variables kind of connected to artificial intelligence and how they correlate. But looking for these measures, you really can't do it in a one-on-one basis. This is something that you need artificial intelligence to be your co-pilot in identifying what specific things can I do to be able to coach you in the direction that you need to get into to be successful in the position.
Yeah, I love that. So what would you say, Liam, are the biggest challenges that you're facing within Time Doctor nowadays?
I mean, for us, it's always talent. And we have a very unique model. We have team members in 47 different countries all over the world. And it is a constant challenge trying to weave together so many different cultures. We are probably the most diverse organization that I've ever encountered because we have, I remember in 1 week, I had a conversation with someone that was transitioning from male to female. And in that same week, I had a conversation with someone that was debating getting a second wife in a country in which that was legal, right? So all of these people can work inside of the same organization because it's about the work that we're doing. It's not necessarily the political sphere or anything else that kind of impacts that particular model. And we see that as a massive strength for who we are as a company. But it does come with it a lot of cultural, landmines. Inside of the organization that we need to be able to adapt for. And we've really focused on being a non-political organization. So, you know, if you are, we just recently actually had a huge discussion about the Israeli-Palestinian war. And our mindset was, we are big on peace. We don't want Israelis killing Palestinians, and we don't want Palestinians killing Israelis. And what we're focused on is anything that helps to stop either of those things from happening. But that is difficult because we have some team members that are very much clearly on one side and other team members that are very much clearly on the other side. But reinforcing that our goal is to be able to do this work, not to necessarily be a political weapon for one side or the other. So that is an interesting issue as it's related into kind of weaving together our culture. And it just reinforces you've got to be able to have strong mission, vision, and values and continuously reinforce that so that people are focused on that and not necessarily on the secondary factor.
Yeah, I mean, I can't agree more with that, because I think especially in your, if you look at your talent strategy and finding the right people, you know, knowing that people might want to get political, that needs to be a part of your talent strategy. We are not a political organization.
And we make it very clear from the get-go. That's one of our sub-values is we don't get into that stuff. If you want to use your work environment to be able to discuss politics, you won't be doing it here. You'll very clearly get a message that that's just not appropriate, that you can do that in your spare time, but that's not a work activity.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I had a client who after Roe was overturned here in the United States, had employees demanding she take it up with the entire organization. And she says, I'm not going to do that because there are people in this organization who are not pro-choice. This is not an appropriate place to have that conversation. You know, it's just not.
This is not a political organization.
Our company will spiral downhill just like our country is because of that.
And particularly in the current political climate that we're in, I mean, it seems like it's getting more divisive. And so if we can actually create an environment in which those two groups talk together, we actually see it as a net positive, because you're realizing, hey, the other people on the other side of the fence, they're not that bad. I work with Charlie. You know, Charlie's pro-choice and I really like Charlie. Or, you know, I work with Susan and she's not, and I really like her. Those are examples of things that I think we need to have more of in the world. I'm not American, I'm Canadian, but I remember actually going to a dinner with approximately 12 of my friends, and this was right during Trump getting elected. And they were all not very excited about Trump getting elected.
And these are all Canadians.
Your political views are. Yeah, they were all Americans, but they were not very happy about Trump getting elected.
Okay.
And I said, well, how many of you know someone who voted for Trump? Because more than 50, almost 50% of the US population voted for Trump. So what kind of a bubble are you inside of that you don't actually talk to anyone on the other side of the fence? And that's my perspective, is you need to actually reach out and you need to communicate to understand, because if you understand, then you can probably come to some form of peace. And I mean, again, that's kind of me becoming political where we shouldn't be becoming political. But my philosophy is you need to actually interact with both sides to be able to have an environment where everyone can work together. And we just create that environment inside of Time Doctor.
Agreed. So, Liam, if you look at your path from being a founder to where you are, you know, currently, as we record this at the end of 2023, what kind of mistakes have you made over the years as a leader? And, you know, pick a couple. And how did you come upon realizing this was not an effective way to work? And what did you do to change?
So there's a lot that are popping into the top of my head. I'll just tell you the ones off the top. So I almost think of it as a stage progression, not focusing on mission, vision, and values early enough. So we didn't really implement that until we were at about 100 people. And now it is a core component of everything that we do. And I thought that was crunchy granola in the sky. We're here to make money, right? We're not here to kind of have a mission and vision and value. But I realized that that was a beacon for everyone else that was like us. We talk about drinking the Kool-Aid inside of the company. So you have to be fully committed to empowering the world's transition towards remote work. And if you're not, you need to not work here. You need to go work somewhere else because we're really not interested in working together. And we put a lot of resources into sniffing that out. We actually ran a mission, vision, values audit, and we ended up letting go of 11 people last year, specifically because they were not owning up to the mission, vision, and values of the organization. So we're very serious about it. And when we let go of those 11 people, I can tell you our other team members had a sigh of relief. And it wasn't that these team members weren't good at their jobs. Some of them were excellent at their jobs. They just did not connect to the mission, vision, and values of the organization. And for that reason and that reason alone, we helped them move on to somewhere else. And all of those people, by the way, got jobs very quickly. They're very smart people. But we realized it just wasn't they weren't the people for us. And we helped them realize that as well. So that's one big factor that I would just reinforce. Even though it seems scary, you gotta do it. You gotta have those people that are aligned towards what you're doing as a company, because then you can't put that dent in the universe that you're hoping to do with your company. The second part actually connected, almost entirely connected to COVID. So in 2020, we went to growing at 202% for the year of 2020. For a SaaS business, for an eight-figure SaaS business, that is off the charts. That is insane levels of growth. We would have been in like the 0.01% of companies at that point. And me and my business partner, Rob, we were very scared. We had never experienced this type of growth before. So we started hiring a whole bunch of experts to work with us. And we realized that our gut was actually much better than the vast majority of the experts that we hired, in realizing we hired so many people that we actually started to fracture our culture. And we needed to, back in about 2022, we realized that we needed to pull all that back in and do a lot of repair a lot of the cultural fractures that had been created by hiring a lot of people that weren't aligned to our culture in the first place. And it was entirely based off of me and my business partner recognizing that we had never been in this type of rarefied air before. So we needed to hire a whole bunch of experts. And that wasn't incorrect, but it was the speed at which we hired them that we needed to be able to address. We just could not do the culture checks properly. And we were putting people into positions of power that I think created a long-term negative impact on the business.
That's a really, really great epiphany. And I'm sorry we didn't know each other back then. Because that's, you know, that is so common. You know, companies think they're doing it the right way. And when they look back and they think, God, that was just a goat rodeo. What were we thinking? And I say to them, do you know how much money you would have saved if you had just hired me 18 months ago?
Right.
Like, you could have avoided this.
Yeah.
All of this.
In 2022, we looked at the numbers. And there were 8 employees hired that I did the job of in 2020. So we were hiring all of these different positions to be able to delegate different responsibilities inside of the organization, and realizing that we were losing our culture. And one of the other things that we implemented was we hired a very strong head of people inside of the organization, and we made sure that we injected mission, vision, and values into that head of people, and they act as the cultural vanguard for allowing people into the organization. And he will not hire people that the actual hiring manager really wants to have in the company. The manager really wants this person in the company, but he will say no, they don't connect to our mission, our vision, or our values. I can identify that. So they're not going to be part of the company. And that's really painful for the manager, but it's just saving us so much money long-term.
Of course it is. I mean, for me, you're preaching to the choir. For everybody who's listening to this, hopefully they're learning a little something, right? Because that's exactly how it should be done. You know, the problem is that companies are not proactive. They're reactive, right? So you were reactive, you learned that, and now you're proactive.
So, yeah,
And that will save you
everyone's
a
happier,
great
by
deal
the way.
Of money. That's right.
You do not want to work with a-holes. It's just not fun. And I have a really good litmus test for this, which is, would I voluntarily go out to dinner with that employee? If we were just friends and we were going to go out to dinner together, would I go out to dinner with that person? If the answer is no, that person really doesn't connect with our culture, because me and my co-founder are an embodiment of that culture. And so that's one of the really clear litmus tests that we've been running recently. And it's so effective, because when we let go of those people, we hear a sigh of relief from coworkers in that particular department. And if I don't hear that sigh of relief, then maybe we made the wrong decision. And it's just been something that is, again, me learning this is, you know this better than anyone else. And I had to come to this realization, and I probably have a lot more to learn in this, in that particular role. But it is so important for us to be able to reinforce that inside of the company, that I am kind of almost like a fundamentalist when it comes to that perspective, which is, you have to have clear mission, vision, and values, and you have to reinforce it every week inside of the company. And if people aren't aligned with that, move them on.
Right. So how do you actually describe or define your culture?
So I think about culture a lot. Being a sociologist of work, I take a very sociological perspective, which is, what are the unique actions that our company takes that would seem odd or weird or peculiar to someone else? So case in point, before 2020, we worked entirely remotely. That was very weird. Not many people did that. And if you didn't want to align with that particular culture, then you wouldn't work in the company. That group has gotten exponentially bigger since COVID. But more importantly, we operate asynchronously. So if you expect to be able to jump on daily calls with your manager, that's not what we do here. We have a value called self-guided missile, which is, you basically tell someone what outcome you want to produce, and it's up to that employee, that direct report, how you hit the target. You're a self-guided missile. So if you're not aligned to being a self-guided missile, if you need constant feedback from your manager, again, this is not a place that you should be working. You should find somewhere else to be able to work. And we constantly test this inside of the organization. If someone is coming to me with problems without a solution, that's a perfect example of not being a self-guided missile. Then there's a bunch of other factors that we kind of correlate to this. But fundamentally for us, those are just some of the things that we think about day in, day out, in terms of just, again, getting everyone aligned on the same page.
Yeah, got it. If somebody, you know, as we said, if there may be somebody out there in stealth mode building a company like yours, but if somebody were getting into this industry, what kind of advice would you give them?
That's a good question. I would say we are in a massive transition moment, not only for the time tracking industry, but for a lot of HR tech that exists right now. I think we're probably going to be, I think 2024 is actually going to be very painful for the HR industry, particularly in the tech industry. We're seeing the demand for engineers go down precipitously. We're seeing a lot of positions that used to be, do I work at Google? Do I work at Facebook? Do I work at, you know, Apple? Now not getting any offers whatsoever. And I think you're also seeing on the bottom end, a lot of AI co-pilots that are helping people do their work that people are finding very scary. So I think you need to be very nimble. I think you need to be able to move very, very quickly. I think there are going to be a lot of eight-figure companies, nine-figure companies that are probably going to have to pivot over the next year to truly take advantage of the opportunities that are going to be available in 2024. I think 2023 was, wow, there's this AI thing and it's really cool. And 2024 will be the implementation of it inside of the marketplace, and you'll see real traction start to occur. So don't be afraid to, like we do. I have this constant ringing in my ears with regards to Steve Jobs talking about the iPod versus the iPhone. When he built the iPhone, he destroyed the iPod.
Right. I know. I think I've got two of them in a drawer here.
Yeah. So the iPod was a $40 billion a year business.
Yeah, it was, oh God, they were fabulous.
And he
yeah.
obliterated it.
Yeah.
He destroyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he realized we either innovate and we build this next generation of the future device, or someone else will come up and drink up our milkshake. I think that's going to be 2024 for most of HR tech.
Oh, that's really interesting. Well, we'll have to review this 12 months from now.
Yeah, sure.
Liam, what's your day-to-day look like as a leader? What do you spend your time doing?
So I get up in the morning, I look at all my dashboards, which is probably not the right thing to do. It's very triggering sometimes, but I look at all my dashboards, HR dashboard, revenue dashboard, CS dashboard, marketing, sales, and just kind of do a high-level assessment of where we're at in the business. See if there's any particular fires that I need to put out. And I don't put them out directly. I just ping my leader and get an update on it. Then for me, it is mostly doing innovation. So talking to customers, figuring out what their real pain points are. Henry Ford has this famous saying, which is, if I paid attention to customers, I would have just built a faster horse. That's not the way that you should build product. You should focus on what are their real problems that fit, that sit behind the problems that they're presenting to you, and try to solve for that. So I do a lot of that. I talk to customers all the time. And then secondarily, doing this. So doing podcasts, doing events. I do a lot of flying. I fly usually about once a year, doing events, that kind of a thing. And then just company retreats. I actually just finished our company retreat that we did in Mexico last week. And it was so great to be able to have the entire executive team in one place and looking at how to kind of reset for the next year, which is essentially for us more of just like a victory lap more than anything else, getting everyone really excited about what we're doing next and making sure that we're reinforcing those values, mission, vision, and values inside of the company.
Yeah, you know, and I meant to ask you earlier, and I slipped over it and talking about something else. Who is your ideal client? Who are you going after in the market?
So for us, it's HR professionals generally. And then secondarily, it would be the CEO of the company or the COO of the company, workforce efficiency specialists. So people that are looking at how do large organizations operate and what processes can we do to be able to improve in the organization. That's a big group of people. And outside of that, I mean, we actually have a very active community of individual contributors. There are thousands of people that just use the technology on their own to be able to see whether or not they can be more productive throughout their own workday. Those are the people that I really love to talk to. They are not profitable. They account for like 2.8% of our revenue, but they're the most passionate customers that we have inside of the company.
Is there a particular size of organization you're after in the market?
It depends. We have companies, we have organizations that have one employee, we have organizations that have 30,000. So it's really a lot of variation, but I would say the majority are between 100 to 500 employees. That's really the number where this type of technology for an HR professional is incredibly valuable, because again, it provides that wide net to not have to look after 500 individual people, but focus on the 17 that might be quitting next month that mm-hmm. you can save.
Right. Liam, you and your co-founder, Rob, wrote the book Running Remote. I think you have it with you.
yes, I do.
It's a blueprint. You kind of refer to it as a blueprint for remote work success, packed with lots of tips and you know, for leading remote teams. What kind of an impact do you think that's had?
Boy, impact has been interesting. So we've sold about 13,000 copies as it stands today. Again, being focused on quantifiable outcomes and measurements, we sold about 13,000 copies so far. The thing that I really try to measure is the amount of people that email me back saying, hey, I read your book and I implemented these things inside of the company. And I've been really surprised. We had Fidelity Financial, a company that I never even knew had read our book. It worked into the organization. They bought 8 or 9 copies for their HR team, and now they're implementing asynchronous management at scale inside of that type of a company. Again, our focus is empowering the world's transition towards remote work. And a part of that is distributed work and hybrid work. Essentially, if you can just have people be freer in making their own decisions on where they work and how they work, we think that makes for a better world. So in that context, I think we're helping. I don't know what the impact is. I think if we've even added 1% to that movement, we're very, very happy about it.
Tell me a little bit about your Running Remote conference.
Sure. So we've been running that since 2018, before remote work was cool. And we've had hundreds of different speakers, from people that are running location-independent lifestyles, so people that are working from their laptops and traveling all over the world, to multi-billion-dollar companies that are run completely remotely or hybrid or in a distributed manner. So we talked to all of those experts and really shine a light on showing that it is entirely possible to build a billion-dollar company remotely. And that's really our core goal, is we're trying to bring all of those leaders together into one place to provide a lot of information exchange on how to build and continue to build and scale those types of organizations. A lot of the times we almost kind of see it as, we just did our company retreat in Mexico last week. This is a company retreat for remote work experts that can all come together and do information exchange.
Yes, that's slick. And where will that be next year?
It is going to be in Lisbon, Portugal, April 23rd and 24th. And very soon, we're actually, I think at the end of this year, we're going to be, our ticket prices are going to be going up. So if you want to get in on it, you'll probably have to do it before then. But if this podcast comes out after that, just message me and I'll honor that for your listeners.
Got it. Yeah, because it probably won't come out before that.
Right.
Might, yeah. So on a personal note, how do you spend your time when you're not working?
With my 2 kids. So I have a 3.5-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I really enjoy being a parent. I didn't think I would, but I really love it. And I would have no problem whatsoever being a work-at-home dad, professional parent. Mm-hmm. I think I would probably love it. I love what I'm currently doing, but essentially every free moment I spend with my kids, I really find it incredibly exciting to be able to see these tiny little human beings that you can craft in your own image.
So if somebody listening to this podcast is thinking, oh, I really think this company's pretty neat, I'd be interested in exploring working for them, what should they do?
I think you should go to timedoctor.com/jobs. That's the best place to go. Tells you about our company culture, what our mission, vision, and values are, talks about the story of how we built our company, and then tells you what available positions we have. And even if there's a position that's not available, put your name in anyways. We are always constantly checking that database, because if you align with our mission, vision, and values, that's more important than anything else. And we will usually put you on a list that will get you an email within approximately a year when we're looking for that particular type of person.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Is there anything that I have not asked you, that I've forgotten to ask you, that you want to talk about?
People always ask me that question. And I think, you know, the only question that I have, which is, and maybe this is a question that we can share between the two of us, is where is remote work going over the next 36 months? It is a doozy. We have had such a wild ride over since 2020. A complete transition of everything that we understand about work. Just to give everyone the context, pre-2020, 4.5% of the U.S. workforce was working remotely. Mm-hmm. In February of 2020. Mm-hmm. By March, it was 67% of the U.S. workforce. That is the biggest transition in work since the Industrial Revolution, but the Industrial Revolution took 80 years and we did that in March.
Yeah.
So it changed everything that we can possibly think of with regards to work. And where are we going now? Who knows? It's a very exciting future. I can tell you, however, in the last two quarters, the net amount of hours worked from home have gone up, not down. So we're now in that, there's an academic from Stanford, Nick Bloom, who's also speaking at Running Remote this year. And he has this perspective of the Nike swoosh back to remote work. So we've already basically experienced the bottoming out of the push back to the office. There's very clearly that tension between employee and employer for a lot of reasons that we probably can't necessarily get into inside of this particular podcast. Very bad for someone, for a publicly traded company, to be able to abandon 30% of their P&L, which is their corporate real estate, and all of the implications that kind of connects to that in terms of their stock price. But we're seeing that remote work go up by about 1.5% from two quarters ago to today. And we're going to continue to see that turn back up. So that tension between corporate America, corporate real estate, and the worker will continue to be a pressure point throughout 2024 and 2025.
You know, as somebody who was working from home long before it became chic, almost 20 years before that happened, I can attest to the fact that you don't need to be in an office to be able to do your job. And I think the wonderful thing that 2020 brought us around the world is that companies actually started to realize that, right? Oh, you can get your job done at home.
Yes.
So it's a bit of a
Pandora's box in that context.
Right.
Which is, not only did companies realize it, which we're very happy to support at Running Remote, by the way, but a whole bunch of employees figured out the same thing too. And I think that that is going to be, it's already a conflict that exists. It's only going to get worse as we see many companies today that are realizing that these people aren't coming back. That's a permanent change. We've tried everything we possibly can to be able to get them back in the office, and they're not doing it. And we now need to make some very difficult decisions because the $6 billion of corporate real estate that we have in our P&L is actually now worth $3 billion, and we need to be able to come to terms with that. That's going to be 2024, and it's going to be rough.
Well, I don't know how they haven't come to terms with it yet, because in 2020, when we were still in the midst of this, I said, boy, corporate real estate, it is going to collapse. And people are like, really? I'm like, yeah. How do you not see that? Of course it is. Because, you know, some companies are going to try to make their people go back to work, which we then saw. And it just didn't work. People revolted.
And they continue to. So as I said before, the net amount of remote work that's currently occurring today has gone up from 6 months ago and will continue to go up. And you need to, it's very difficult, but BlackRock, 42% of their portfolio is in corporate real estate. They essentially need to take a 10 to 15% haircut on their entire portfolio that needs to be readjusted. We're talking, that is the largest corporation on the planet. And so it's very, very difficult to be able to change that mindset. And it's going to be a very difficult pill to swallow. But, and I've been thinking to myself, well, this must be happening throughout 2023, but it's being held up by a lot of different factors that, again, we can't get into inside of this podcast. And I would get a little too conspiratorial, to be honest with you, for this podcast. But I think it is going to happen in 2024 because you can't have a Salesforce One, the largest building in San Francisco, be 13% full and not be able to sell any of the rest of their space. Brand new building that was built in 2021 and things not start to crack.
They need to turn it into apartments. So with that, yep. Liam Martin, co-founder and chief innovation officer of Time Doctor, thanks so much for being with me. I really enjoyed this conversation with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Authentically Successful Show. Don't forget to click follow to hear more, and please leave us an honest review and rating so we can continue to improve and bring you more great stories. If you're interested in being my next guest, please check the episode description for information to apply. This is Carol Schultz. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.